Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. For the 30th year in a row, Downtown Kingston is releasing a new pewter collection celebrating the city's history with both long-standing and brand new landmarks. Each year, Downtown Kingston releases a new limited edition ornament collection to add some Limestone City flair to holiday decorating. This year's lineup includes one of the original ornaments from 1994, two landmarks that Kingston said goodbye to in 2024, and two new ones. For the first time, one of the picks represents a brand new addition to the city this year, depicting the hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, an instantly iconic spot since its installment in October. The series launched today with the old train station, and a new ornament will be made available every Monday until December 16th. I sat down with Jan McDonald, Director of Events with the Downtown Kingston BIA, to chat about this year's releases. A lot of the pieces of the collection this year are part of Kingston's very recent history, especially concerning the LaSalle Causeway and the Wolf Islander 3. When were these decided upon?
So throughout the year, we get suggestions from people in the community, people who work downtown, and then we collect them all. And end of summer, when we're kind of wrapping up all of our summer activities, we start to look at the nominations that have been sent in and ideas that we have within our office as well. And then it gets narrowed down about the time of Labor Day weekend. It takes a little while to obviously come up with a collection and then put it together and then get them made into ornaments. So by about Labor Day, we know exactly what we're doing for that year.
And this is the 30th year this is being done. How do you feel being able to continue this longstanding tradition?
Well, it's always exciting, I think, every year. People love to collect them. We have a number of people who tell us that they haven't even opened the packages, that they felt it was such a collector's item that they've kept them at home in the original packaging, which is really fun. But then others have, you know, full trees that are covered in 30 years worth of ornaments. So it's a really nice nod to a way to celebrate the holiday season, to get people downtown shopping, because, of course, they have to purchase $25 worth of anything from downtown in order to purchase the ornaments. So it's a win-win on so many levels.
Yeah, for sure. And I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the history of this project. Do you know how it kind of started and how it ended up, where it is today as sort of a way to get people shopping downtown and also a way to commemorate Kingston's history?
Sure. So the program started in 1994. A couple of years before that, some people who were on the board and involved with Downtown Kingston had found out about ornaments that were made in Canada and that were being used in other areas to commemorate buildings or historic events, that kind of thing, and thought it would be a great way to celebrate Kingston. Of course, there's just so many iconic buildings downtown that the first few years were really easy. I mean, obviously, City Hall, the old train station, the beautiful churches downtown, the incredible limestone buildings at Queens. And then in order to integrate it into a program that would benefit downtown, the idea was developed to have people shop, show their receipts, and then they would receive the ornament at a discounted price. Normally, the ornaments would be about $25 each or more if you were purchasing them just on their own at a pewter shop. But we do this campaign in order to bring people down, get them shopping before Christmas, and then end up with something that's a collector's item, that's a great stocking stuffer, or that they can keep in their own collection and decorate their own trees.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for the history lesson there. And I was wondering if you could run through our ornaments this year and when they're coming out.
Sure. So the first ornament is released on Monday, and each ornament is released on a Monday, and this one's Monday, November 18th. It's the old train station, which is one of the first five that was released in 1994. It's been out of stock since 1995, I guess, and so we decided to do that one again. It's now the Visitor Information Center. It's had a number of different iterations, but it's been the Visitor Information Center for quite a while now. Secondly, November 25th is the building at 178 Ontario Street. It was the Frontenac Hotel for many, many decades, but has been a series of restaurants and bars, the Kokomo, Blue Martini, Brandy's, and it's actually a beautiful building in its own right, and I'm surprised we've never done it before, so happy to do that on the 25th. The 3rd and the 4th are both iconic fixtures of downtown Kingston area that no longer are in existence. The 3rd one on December 2nd is the Wolf Islander 3, which has been obviously replaced by Wolf Islander 4. So we're happy to bring that one back. And then the 4th, sadly, we lost the LaSalle Causeway this year. To commemorate that, on December 9th, we will be releasing the original LaSalle Causeway ornament that we did about a decade ago. And then we're ending with something brand new. We've actually never done something as part of the Pewter Collection that was original to Kingston that year. So this year we're doing December 16th, the new hip sign that's in front of the Slush Puppy Place. We wanted to honor that because it will, I think, become an iconic part of downtown Kingston, something that people will obviously want to share with their friends and family who were big fans of the hip. So that's the collection, as I said, November 18th and ending with the last one on December 16th. But they will be available for sale at the 3 outlets: the Slush Puppy Place box office, Grand Theatre box office, and the Visitor Information Center, right up until Christmas Eve.
Great stuff. And do you personally have a favorite from this year?
Oh, that's a tough question. I really like them all, but I'm very excited to do the hip sign. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a popular one this year, so I'd probably lean towards that.
Once again, that was Jan McDonald with Downtown Kingston on the 30th Anniversary Pewter Collection. Ornaments will be made available each Monday at the Grand Theatre Box Office, the Leon Centre Box Office, and the Visitor Information Centre. This has been CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie with your headlines for this evening. Next up is student reporter Ali Al-Safadi with your campus news update.
Hello everyone, this is Ali Al-Safadi, CFRC's campus news reporter. Welcome to Today in YGK and to my segment. Today, we're diving into an extraordinary fusion of science and art with the launch of Drift, Art and Dark Matter. This exciting book showcases a unique collaboration that bridges physics and creative expression. Featuring an artist residency program where international artists engaged with scientists to explore the enigmatic world of dark matter. Joining us today are Zachary Kenny, one of the co-authors of this book and communications officer at the McDonald Institute, as well as Mark Richardson, manager of the education and public outreach at the McDonald Institute. This initiative also brings together the Agnes Etherington Art Center, the Public Library, and Queen's University, creating a platform to highlight how art and science can inspire one another. Now let's hear more about the program, the book, as well as the amazing collaborations that made this possible. Hello, thank you for joining me today. Can you please introduce yourselves?
Hi, thanks, Ellie. So I'm Zachary Kenny. I'm the communications officer at the McDonald Institute, which is the Arthur B. McDonald Canadian Astroparticle Physics Research Institute, based here at Queen's University. I come from a background of art and art education and science communication. And when I started at the Institute a number of years ago, I really wanted to do something with art and science. And so that's where sort of the seed of the Drift Artist Residency came from.
So I'm Mark Richardson. I'm the manager for education and public outreach here at the Arthur B. McDonald Canadian Astroparticle Physics Research Institute. And so my main job in working with Zach, for the most part, is really connecting with the scientists, the people that are doing the science, and getting them to connect with the public. So how do I find ways to take the work and the results and the achievements that we're getting across our community, across Canada, and share that with the public so that they understand and care about what we're achieving? Part of that, too, is to inspire and train kind of maybe the next generation of scientists and possibly astroparticle physicists.
Thank you, Zach and Mark. I truly find the connection and overlap between art and science to be extremely fascinating. Moving on, what is your role with the McDonald Institute and how was it involved in the production and the launch of this book?
Yeah, for sure. So my role in the McDonald Institute is really it's communications and marketing. So I work with my colleague Mark here to promote the events that we run through the Institute. A lot of public events, sharing the scientific progress and the science itself with the public. And also connecting with the research community, where the McDonald Institute is actually a national network. So we're partnered with 10 other universities. And so part of my role is connecting the people across those different universities, making sure that they know what's going on and know what's available to them in terms of programs and opportunities.
Thank you, Zach. What inspired you to lead the efforts in organizing this book launch as well as the creation of the book itself?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, I think science and art is such a fascinating crossover and really captures the imagination of a lot of people. Because even if even if you don't know much about the science, you know that art is a visual experience. And so you know that you will be able to engage with it on some level. And it's always interesting to see how artists can approach a topic like something like dark matter, which is, invisible. We haven't detected it yet. We don't know exactly what it is. So to see how the artists were engaging with that content was just super exciting, and really was an opportunity for us to bring something completely unique to the public. We often will do science talks, right, where we have physicists telling the public about the research that we're doing, about the experiments, about the theories. But this was really a chance for us to engage with the public on in a different way that was much more open and imaginative and creative, and really demonstrate and show people that that kind of engagement with science is something that is valid and really valuable for the community, for the physics community, for them, for the researchers to be able to see these really creative and imaginative ways about how their research is being interpreted or viewed, but also for the public to see that other side of things too.
That sounds truly interesting. Over to Mark. This book connects art and dark matter. My question to you is, how do you view dark matter as a physicist from an artist's perspective?
And so the question was about like how could maybe dark matter be conceptualized like from an artist perspective? And the fun aspect about doing the artist residency is I do admit, especially the scientists, had some ideas about what they expected would be captured in that process by the artists. And the experience that we had as a result was that in every way, I feel like it was a bit of a surprise. Like the way the artists engage with the ideas and the opportunity to speak with scientists and be in the research facilities, how that turned into art was very unique. And that's what's unique about art in the sense that like it's not a recipe, it's not like follow the steps. It's really to each person to create with it what they will. Thinking about this, we actually had an event during the residency process where October 31st of every year, so it just passed for us now, is Dark Matter Day. And so at the time, we had what we called an Art of Dark Matter event, where we mailed art supplies to a bunch of people across Kingston and Ontario that wanted to engage with this idea as well. So they could be their own little mini artist residents. And so we actually, had a nice talk by Art MacDonald, professor here at Queen's and Nobel laureate, and talking about dark matter. And then we just kind of had this free space to just hang out where everybody was creating art. And what that looked like for a lot for most people because of the materials that we provided was mostly paintings. But some people got a little bit, I don't think outside the box on that, making somewhat structure or physical materials as well. And so at the end of the day, like, there's a whole bunch of different ways people could show that. And it's hard to kind of capture some of those ideas here. From things like, I mean, ones that stand out for me was this idea that dark matter is this extra gravity, this extra weight in the universe. And so one artist just drew a picture of an icon of an inbox symbol with thousands of unread messages. And just that sentiment of invisible but yet dreaded weight. I feel like, oh my God, I have so many messages to go through.
Thank you so much. Now, can you please elaborate more on the residency program itself and how this book ties into the program?
Yeah, so the book is basically the kind of the final product of the project itself, which started as the residency. So we partnered with the Agnes Etherington Art Center. The curator there, Sunny Kerr, had invited four artists from all over the world. We had an artist coming from Vancouver, from France, from the UK, two from France, actually. And so they came to Kingston, to Queens, and we, took them around Stirling Hall, through the physics labs there. So they got to see sort of the tabletop, prototype experiments that are being developed, here at Queens, and meet with the physicists here. And then we went up, to Snow Lab in Sudbury with them, where we went 2 kilometers underground at Snow Lab through the mines, and went through the clean lab there and saw the full scale operational dark matter and neutrino experiments and detectors there. And then again, got to talk with the different people involved in those projects. And so it was really a unique experience for those artists to be able to, see those things in person, take pictures, take recordings, and then meet and talk and ask questions to the people who are doing that research. And then so after that was, this period where the artists were back at their home studios creating art and, coming up with ideas for what they were going to create. And we continued to have weekly meetings with all of the artists and arranged for all kinds of different people to, to meet with them over Zoom. It was during the pandemic as well, to just continue those conversations, continue to ask the questions about the physics, and also have conversations that were not science related, not physics related, that were more focused on, ethics or philosophy and those kinds of things. So the residence itself was quite diverse, and I think reflected in the artwork that was created. So that artwork was exhibited at the Agnes Etherington Art Center and also toured. So it went to the Belkin Gallery in Vancouver, went to Ottawa and then Toronto as well. So it was a national exhibition. And each of those locations also had, their own special programming, their own unique events and things that they did with the exhibition. So there was really a lot of programming created around the project as well. Artist talks and different performances, those kinds of things. And then this book is kind of the collection of that whole experience. So it catalogs the artwork, very beautiful documentation of the artwork in the exhibition, but also brings together a number of different voices that were involved in the project. So the artists who wrote about their experiences and the artwork, but then some essays from other people like Art MacDonald, who had a chance to meet with the artists when they were here and engage in the project in that way. So it's really kind of like the final chapter in this big culmination of the whole project.
And just something to add in there that I didn't hear you speak to, Zach, is along that whole process from the events happening at other sites, events that we ran, and then those meetings, it wasn't just, engaging with the artists. It was also scientists were coming, dark matter scientists were coming into those spaces and engaging in those events. And so there, it really was like a two-way exchange. And bringing the artistic and philosophic ideas and sharing them with the scientists as well. So that maybe while we're bringing maybe the science into the practice of the artist, it's also bringing the art into the practice of the scientists.
You mentioned the building of many relationships and the broadening of networks through this program, as well as the creation of this book. But my question is, why is this so important to our community here on campus and in Kingston?
In my area, one of the issues I sometimes see in engaging, particularly with students, is this real, what we call like almost like a lack of a STEM identity. So this is the idea of like, students don't see themselves as scientists. Or sometimes I engage with science students and they don't see themselves as artists. And so part of this process is to really highlight the fact that there is no gap between science students and art students. They like, you can be both. In fact, I think by doing one, you are doing the other. There is no daylight between those. The act of being a scientist is making meaning about our place in the universe and understanding the universe. And that is exactly what artists do. And so at least on the educational side of this program, I really saw within it an opportunity to try to break down this artificial barrier that I think students kind of put themselves in and people put themselves in, and have people just have a chance to kind of take a step back and realize like there's something for them to say, there's something for them to do in science and in art, even if they feel like there really hasn't been a space where they felt belonging before. And ultimately, I think, you know, the Next World Leaders is a group of people that, you know, maybe start doing more interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary work and finding ways that, you know, people in different fields and different subjects and different ways of thinking, bringing them all together it's going to be necessary, I guess, to solve the next world problems. And so I think steps like an artist residencies are ways of paving the road to make that really evident about how you can go about doing this and thinking in different fields in different ways.
I think that's a really great point, Mark. I really love that idea that, you know, that projects like this can really inspire creative thinking in students. You know, we see all of this AI stuff coming out and, you know, that can write your essays for you, all that kind of stuff. But the ability to think for yourself, to think critically and creatively is super, super important. You know, for people that are in schools now and entering the workplace, it's going to be the unique skill that really, you know, moves us forward, as Mark said, in terms of leadership. So I think that even it on its own is just something that is really important to recognize. I think the other side of this is that it was all created here, right? We have Emily Schanger, the director of the Agnes Etherington Art Center, Sunny Kerr, who's the curator, Art McDonald, and myself and Mark, we're all in Kingston at Queen's. And, you know, we made all of this happen, you know, but basically between, you know, Queen's and the Agnes and Snow Lab. So it is just really kind of like a homegrown project as well. So I think people in Kingston especially can get really excited about that. You know, coming out on Monday and to see, you know, all of the people that were involved in this and wrote essays in the book will be there. And you know, I'm sure some people will want to get some books signed and that kind of thing too. So that'll be cool.
Thank you both so much. Can you please tell us where the book launch is happening? I am so eager to get my hands on a copy now.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ali. Yeah, so this is happening at Monday, November 18th at between 5 and 7 p.m. at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library Central Branch, which is at 130 Johnson Street, Kingston.
A big thank you to Zach Kenny and Mark Richardson for sharing their incredible journey behind Drift, Art and Dark Matter. This book and the Artist Residency Program showcase the power of collaboration between art and science, offering new ways to understand and engage with the universe around us. If you want to learn more, check out the book launch happening at the downtown branch of the library hosted by the McDonald Institute, the Agnes Etherington Art Center, and the Public Library. As always, this is Ali Safadi, CFRC's Campus News Reporter. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to stay informed, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, CFRC listeners. I'm Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, and you're tuned in to the CFRC Sports Desk, where we bring you the latest in Queen's athletics. Let's dive into this weekend's thrilling matchups. First up, the Queen's women's volleyball team pulled off an electrifying 5-set victory over the Waterloo Warriors on Saturday. After taking the first two sets with scores of 25-23, 25-13, the Gales faced a comeback challenge, dropping the third and fourth sets, but they regrouped in the fifth, sealing the win with determination. Amanda Sixna from the Faculty of Education was a stand-up performer, racking up 14 points, including 8 kills, 5 blocks, and 2 aces. Coach Shanice Marcel praised the team's ability to reset and bring the fire when it mattered the most. With this win, the Gales improved their season record to 7-1 and sit second in the OUA standings. They'll hit the road next weekend to face the York Lions, so stay tuned to OUA.tv for updates. Meanwhile, the Queen's men's hockey team returned to form with a dramatic 2-1 overtime win against the York Lions. Nolan Hutchinson, currently tied for second in U Sports for goals, scored the game-winning goal 4 minutes into overtime. The Gales also had stellar contributions from Liam Tanner, who tied the game in second period with help from Derek Hamilton and Lucas Perrick, and goalie Aiden Spooner, who made 29 saves on the first night. Queens dominated in shots on goal, putting up 48 against York. With this win, they now hold a 10-3 record and are tied for second in the OUA East Division standings. And finally, Queens women's basketball continued their winning streak with a 57-42 victory over Laurier, marking their fourth consecutive win. Allie Smith and Ella Take led the charge in a game where the Gales outpaced the Golden Hawks with a dominant 22-point fourth quarter. This keeps them third in the OUA East standings, just behind the Ottawa Gigis. Catch them next Sunday, November 22nd, at the Arc. And that's your sports roundup for today. This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie with your evening weather report. Stay tuned.
Thank you, Isabella. Now for our CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight, we're expecting partly cloudy skies with a low of 0. Tomorrow, on Tuesday, November 19th, we're expecting mainly cloudy skies with a high of 9 degrees. Tuesday night, we'll have cloudy periods and a low of plus 2. On Wednesday, November 20th, we have a mix of sun and cloud and a high of 8 degrees. Then Wednesday night, cloudy skies with a 70% chance of rain and a low of plus 4. On Thursday, November 21st, we're expecting periods of rain to continue with a high of 7 degrees, then Thursday night, more rain with a low of plus 2. On Friday and headed into the weekend, we're expecting those showers to continue with a 40% chance of showers and cloudy skies throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That wraps up your weather report for this evening, and next up is Jessie Bell with your CFRC Weekly Traffic Report.
This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, November 18th, 2024. The following road closures will be taking place on Saturday, November 23rd for the annual Nighttime Santa Claus Parade and Tree Lighting Ceremony. Market Street, Ontario to King will be closed from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. King Street, Brock to Clarence will be closed from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Princess Street, Sir John A. Macdonald to Ontario is closed from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Road closures. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess 2, 486 Albert is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction at 484 Albert Street. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick is closed to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. University Avenue, Union to Earl is closed for construction related to the Queens J-Duck. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bay Ridge Drive Active Transportation Upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase two of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard at Elmwood, expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. And that concludes the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, November 18th, 2024. This is your events calendar for the week. Have an event you'd like covered? Reach out via cfrc.ca today. On Monday, November 18th, the Kingston Frontenac Public Library Central Branch is hosting a free craft and makerspace session from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Also on Monday, folks can head out from 5:25 p.m. to 7 p.m. for the Loggers and Joggers at Riverhead Brewing Company. Be sure to dress for current jogging weather. The Brass and One-Eyed Jacks will host their weekly trivia games as well, starting at 7 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. respectively. On Tuesday, November 19th, Addiction and Mental Health Services KFLA is hosting a music and mental health drop-in group where folks can bring instruments and make new friends. 552 Princess Street from 10:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Also on Tuesday, Friendship Blooms Craft Group is running an intergenerational craft session from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Kingston Community Health Centers on Weller Avenue. The Faculty of Arts and Science is hosting an event for folks interested in going to grad school at Career Services in Gordon Hall on the third floor from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. The Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. You can also grab your runners and head over to Lululemon downtown at 5:30 p.m. for a weekly fun run. Jog, mingle, and have fun. This run is for all ages and abilities. Also on Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m., there is a newcomers men's group hosted by Immigrant Services Kingston and Area where newcomer men can meet other newcomers at 837 Princess Street. Daft Brewing is also hosting a euchre night starting at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, November 20th, head over to the Rideau Heights Community Center for the Fresh Food Market pop-up featuring fresh, healthy, and affordable food options between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. Muziki Cafe is also hosting its weekly life drawing event. Bring your own art supplies and $5 to participate in uninstructed life drawings and make some new friends while you're at it. The Grad Club is hosting Be Kind Rewind Drag Celebration of the 90s featuring performances from some of your favorite local drag entertainers as well as music videos. Show off your knowledge with 90s trivia and your footbag skills with a hacky sack contest. The fun starts at 8 p.m. Tickets are $12. Something in the Water Brewing and Daft Brewing will also host their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m. Daft Brewing will also host Drag Bingo with Rowena Way starting at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, November 21st, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. You can also head out Thursday to Kingston Community Health Centers, which will host the weekly Penguins Seniors Social Group for individuals 55 plus from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Immigrant Services Kingston and Area will also host its Intermediate English Circle for folks seeking to enhance their fluency and vocabulary. Also on Thursday, head over with your runners to Runner's Choice for the weekly Out in Front Running Group for 2SLGBTQ plus runners, ready to run at 6:15 for a 5 to 6-kilometer run followed by a post-run social. A comedy of drag errors takes place with host Rowena Way alongside guest performances including Tiffany Morgan, Blow Pony, Street Meat, and out-of-town guest Jordana Miles. The show starts at 7 p.m. at the Broom Factory. You can also head over to Daft Brewing for Queerioki starting at 8 p.m. There is a $5 cover charge. And of course, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, November 22nd, the YMCA will host its weekly fresh food market from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Bonnie and Clyde the Musical debuts and will run 10 performances at Theatre Sesame in the Centre Culturel Frontenac, 1290 Wheat Hill, behind the RioCan Centre. Showtime start at 7:30 p.m. and general admission is $35. On Saturday, November 23rd, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, McKinnon Brothers Brewing in Bath is hosting its annual holiday market with over 50 vendors selling artisanal crafts. You can also head out for another craft and bake sale being held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Royal Kingston Curling Club. On Sunday, November 24th, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. The Kingston Symphony Volunteers All Things Christmas Gifts and Art Sale is also taking place at the Kingston Symphony Warehouse, 785 Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., with proceeds supporting the Kingston Symphony. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. That's all for this week's events calendar. If you have an event you'd like covered, reach out via cfrc.ca, and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at cfrcmusic.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.